You're listening to Agriculture Today.
New World screwworm has entered the United States via the Texas-Mexico border, making it harder for surrounding farms and ranches to move cattle further north.
Dave Weber is a senior animal protein analyst with Terrain.
The New World screwworm confirmation also appears to have put the reopening of the U.S.-Mexico border to live cattle trade on hold. For now, it appears that drought conditions and heifers leaving ranches due to limited feed availability are the only potential for an increase in available feeder cattle and calf supplies for the foreseeable future. These are not avenues for sustained herd expansion.
Says drought is limiting the hopes for the U.S. beef cow herd expansion, and we could keep cattle prices historically high into next year. Again, three-quarters of the beef cow herd under drought conditions. Higher food prices are squeezing household budgets, reshaping demand across the U.S. food and ag supply chain. Cobank's latest quarterly report says overall food prices up 2.7% from May of last year and about 26% higher than 5 years ago. Report says consumers actually trading down to private label brands, shopping more at discount retailers, reducing discretionary purchases, even buying fewer groceries. Now, that shift matters for ag because consumer behavior eventually affects food companies, retailers, processors, and farm demand. Protein demand remains resilient, but consumers still making careful choices as beef prices stay high and lower cost alternatives compete for grocery dollars. Farmers could gain broader access to equipment repair tools, that under a settlement between the Federal Trade Commission, five states, and Deere and Company. The agreement announced on Wednesday requires Deere to provide farmers and independent repair shops with repair resources comparable to those available to authorized dealers for 10 years. Includes software needed to diagnose problems, clear fault codes, reprogram components, and restart equipment after certain shutdowns. Settlement addresses claims that limited access to Deere software increased repair cost and caused service delays. Farmers have argued those delays can be especially costly during planting, harvest, and other time-sensitive field work. Well, the Bureau of Land Management is using an upcoming adoption event to address a much larger challenge. That's balancing wild horse and burro populations with the health of western rangelands. Agencies will offer 120 horses and burros later in the month. The animals removed from public lands where herd growth can place added pressure on forage, water, wildlife habitat, and other grazing resources. Now, the adoption and sale program gives private owners a role in the long-term management. And finally, USDA expanding crop insurance options for forage producers in 12 states, adding revenue protection beginning with the next crop year. Risk Management Agency says the new coverage will help protect against both yield losses and price declines tied to market changes. Policy will replace actual production history coverage for forage production in select counties. Eligible states: California, Idaho, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Washington, and Wisconsin. Producers in eligible counties need to contact a crop insurance agent before the September 30th closing date. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I think that's one of the reasons why we're starting to see a little bit of resistance in the live repeater cattle.
On why cutout values may affect demand, Elliot Dennis, livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
That, and, you know, we combine that with, you know, where we're at on the international trade, both on the import and export market. And we're seeing just more of that product stay domestically, which means, you know, maybe we don't need to, you know, produce as many animals or really process them because a lot of that product's either being shipped in or we can't really export it because we have too high a value.
From cutouts to conferences, Dr. Mark Johnson, beef breeding specialist, Oklahoma State.
Recently, I had the opportunity to attend the Beef Improvement Federation meetings. This morning, we addressed the topic of selection of replacement heifers and rebuilding the nation's cow herd. We spent the first day or so of meetings with some great speakers talking about that. And we kind of get into the nuts and bolts and peel back the layers of the onion with regard to this topic. And so, first point, the best cows fit their production environment. Now, we've got some dynamics in play right now. We know that for years we've been finishing cattle to heavier weights with a lower inventory and fewer cattle on feed. We're feeding them longer and heavier to create the tonnage of beef that we need to meet consumer demand. A lot of factors have led into this. But it leads to the question, do we need to select for extreme growth and accept larger mature cow size as a result of this trend toward heavier finished weights? In one word, no. We address this from some different angles. First, we do see carcass weights going up. We're 82 pounds heavier year to date than we were in 2023. We've seen this trend for some time. But the reality is that we see packers discounting carcasses over 1,100 pounds. And if we look at the weekly harvest mix, we are seeing a higher percentage of our cattle take these discounts for being too heavy. In short, they are not really fitting what packers want at this point. Second thing that comes in play, we know that our USDA beef yield grade equation is out of date. It no longer does a good job of predicting red meat yield on our fed cattle. A lot of research is underway. It is just a matter of time, possibly within the next couple of years, we're going to have a new equation for red meat yield that replaces that old USDA yield grade. It's going to be more accurate. We're going to have to continue to produce beef to meet consumer demand. We don't know that corn's going to remain historically inexpensive. So it leads us to the point, the best cows fit their production environment. Second topic relative to rebuilding the cow herd. We as cow-calf producers need to change our way of thinking from the amount of profit per cow to the amount of profit per acre of pasture. If you're curious about getting into this deeper, see my article on the cowboy math of mature cow size relative to calf revenue generated from June 17th, 2024. Third big topic that comes in play. Our best replacement heifers are probably the ones produced early in the calving season by our oldest cows. Why is that? Our oldest cows, as we think 6 year old or older, 8 year old or older, those cows have proven that they are a good fit to our production environment. We find that selecting those heifers to develop as replacements and turning them into cows out of those older cows lead to the next generation of cows being more productive and weaning more pounds of calf over their lifetime.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operation safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Farm Bill is always a very interesting sort of, you know, agreement, an interesting coalition that historically has been very bipartisan between the folks who produce the food and the folks who need different or better access to the food, right? So you've got 20% in the bill that really focuses on production agriculture, and you've got about 80% of the bill that focuses on nutrition programs.
Sigrid Johannes is Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
It's typically a bright spot in an otherwise pretty gridlocked or unproductive Congress, because it matters to everybody. Everybody has to eat every single day. Everybody needs fuel and fiber. Everybody is being touched by agriculture every single day in this country, even if they're one of the 98% of Americans who don't work in production agriculture. But the Farm Bill has taken a very interesting path here. As you mentioned, we're about 3 years behind schedule now. And as you mentioned, Tony, we do have one version that has passed the House with bipartisan support that sailed through that chamber in late April. And NCBA was really happy with that version of the bill. To be honest, we got everything in there that we needed, and we got nothing that we don't. And that's exactly where we wanted to land. Things like just basics, reauthorizing voluntary conservation programs that we use, investing in some of those USDA programs that build market access for our product overseas, strengthening animal health measures, all of the basics that we always want to tick off. Plus, we got some good language in that House version on two really important things. One was a pilot program to sort of take a look at a modified Prime Act, or sort of subprime is what some people have been calling it. This is a riff off of the idea that Congressman Massey has championed sort of Congress after Congress. The core tenet is making sure that some of those custom exempt facilities have better access to consumers to sell their beef within their state. But also our concern with that was sort of putting the guardrails in place to also make sure that we still keep that safe and there's enough transparency and traceability of those products to make sure that consumers know exactly what they're getting and that we could respond if we needed to in the event of a food safety or a foodborne illness outbreak for those custom exempt products. But that's one really good item that was included in there. And then the other one that, of course, got a ton of attention was some language to reaffirm producers' rights to raise livestock inside their state, you know, boundaries according to their own state laws and according to federal law, and not according to ballot initiatives that might have been passed in another state. That's obviously a direct response to this Prop 12 issue out of California, that the livestock sector, not just cattle, but mainly hogs and everybody else, has been struggling with for a couple years now. So those were a lot of reasons why we were happy with the result in the House. Now, on the Senate side, as of a couple of weeks ago, we're in a very different environment. The Senate, Chairman John Bozeman from Arkansas on the Senate Agriculture Committee, he's decided not to take up the House bill. They want to do their own. So if this goes according to plan, the Senate would pass their version, and then they would have to go to a conference process to reconcile the House version and the Senate version and come up with a final product that could go to the president's desk. But before they get there, we're at the baby steps part of this, because the Senate just put out their draft text. It's not even the sort of final yet, but they put out draft bill text a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I got to say, Tony, I think the fundamentals in there are great. There's a lot in there that, again, just hits basics on some of those risk management, conservation programs, animal health, the basics that we in the cattle sector look to a Farm Bill process for. They didn't take a whole lot of risks, though, with that draft.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We are seeing China buy some soybeans. They've also been kicking the tires in the corn market, in the soft red and perhaps soft white wheat market, but no evidence of any purchases at this point.
Arlen Sunderman is chief commodities economist with StoneX.
What we have confirmation of from our people on the ground in China is maybe around 22 million bushels or so have been purchased for delivery in September and October. That's about 2.5% of what they committed to buying in the marketing year. That 25 million metric tons, a little less than the 2.5%. So they have a long ways to go, but this is the time of year we would expect them to start buying and getting more aggressive buying toward that. Again, what we hear on the ground in China is that maybe the government's unconfirmed, but we don't know what the government wants to do, but that's kind of the chatter, that government wants to buy at least 15 million metric tons by the end of this calendar year. By that time, that's only 60% of what they committed to, but by that time, they would know if Trump has lost Congress. The new Congress would be taking an effect just a few days after that. They have to make some progress in this agreement because President Xi is going to meet with President Trump again in September and maybe two more times after that before the end of the year. So he has to show progress. But once we get to that first week of January, by that time, they will know if he has lost Congress, therefore his ability to wage tariffs against them, and whether they need to continue on. Because U.S. soybeans are more expensive. Yes, there is a board of trade being set up between the United States and China. Yes, it is working on removing tariffs. Yes, there is a sense that by the time we get to the delivery of these soybeans, we may see the punitive 10% tariff removed from those soybeans and for other ag products as well. But right now, as you look at the pricing, that still would not make U.S. soybeans competitive. And so it would still have to be bought by the state buyers, and the state buyers are essentially immune from those tariffs anyway. So this is a political decision on whether they're going to buy or not. Corn, we're more competitive, and the 10% tariff removal would make a difference. They don't need the corn. They still might buy the corn and put it in reserve. Same thing with wheat. Probably going to lean towards soft wheat if they do buy some wheat. Possibility, though, they could end up eventually buying some hard, but more likely would be in the soft wheat category if, in fact, they do that. Perhaps some beef. They're reaching close to the allotments that Brazil has to sell to them as well as Australia. That may open up the door for some U.S. beef. So that's something we'll watch as well. They are buying sorghum. They continue to buy sorghum from the United States, but they're also buying sorghum from Brazil as well, it looks like. There's signs of that stepping up. And so market's still trying to figure out exactly what China's going to buy toward the $17 billion, or are they going to keep that commitment of all that $17 billion in value of non-soybean purchases on top of the 25 million metric tons of soybean purchases for the next marketing year. So that is a market watching, but it's going to be many months before we know if China's actually going to keep that commitment to the scope that they did. If they do, that's pretty friendly for demand for U.S. ag commodities. That tightens up the balance sheet, particularly with the strong biofuel program we have. If they don't, it doesn't. The market right now wants to assume that they will. And then so any weather threat that may happen would add to that tightness. But that weather threat for now seems to have backed off.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Over the past month, corn and soybean basis strengthened across much of the eastern Corn Belt, a surprise given the historical pattern typically pointing towards basis weakening heading into June.
Josh Strine is with Purdue's Center for Commercial Ag.
Corn basis to July futures strengthened in 38 of the 40 tracked crop reporting districts, while soybean basis held steady or improved across every track district. Corn basis movement ranged from a 5-cent decrease to a 21-cent increase per bushel between the third week of May and the third week of June. Soybean basis movement ranged from no change to a 28-cent increase. The greatest corn basis to July futures strengthening occurred in East Central Ohio, where basis rose to a positive 13 cents per bushel above July futures, a level not seen in the district at this point in the season since the 2012-2013 crop year. On the other end of the spectrum, Northwest Iowa crop basis sits at negative 29 cents per bushel, 37 cents below the three-year historical average. The defining feature of the current basis map is the increasing basis from west to east. In Ohio, corn basis is running well above the three-year historical average across every tracked district. Northeast Ohio is the most extreme example. Basis in the district is currently even with July futures and 27 cents above the historical average for this time of year. Indiana is broadly above the historical averages as well, with many districts carrying positive or near even corn basis. In Iowa, the picture is reversed. Corn basis is negative across the state, with most districts priced 20 to 30 cents below the July futures and sitting 20 to 37 cents below the historical average. State-level ethanol plant basis reinforces the pattern. Ohio corn ethanol bids are running well above the historical average, while Iowa ethanol bids are well below. Turning to soybeans, basis held steady or strengthened across all track districts. The largest moves come in Iowa, where most districts gain more than 20 cents per bushel. Strengthening of Iowa basis has pushed the levels above the two-year averages in many districts for the first time this marketing year. However, basis across the state remain the lowest in the region. For example, in central Iowa, the soybean basis to July futures is negative 41 cents per bushel, but 9 cents above the historical average. In Indiana, the West Central District offers a stark contrast. Basis is just 2 cents below July futures and well above the historical average. Michigan has the strongest soybean basis relative to historical averages in the region. Southeast and West Central Michigan are both running 30 cents or more above their 2-year averages. Basis in these districts remain negative in absolute terms, around 10 to 20 cents per bushel below July futures. Along the Ohio River, the average soybean basis is positive 19 cents per bushel, 8 cents above the 2-year historical average. So what does all of this mean going into July? Historical trends relative to September corn and August soybean futures are encouraging. For corn, the historical pattern suggests continued strengthening across most track districts into mid-July. East Central Ohio, already at its highest level since 2012 and 2013, has historically seen some of the largest gains over the stretch. Michigan is the main exception, where most districts show a flat to slightly negative historical trend. For soybeans, the outlook is similarly positive across most of the region. Michigan, which already has the strongest basis market relative to the historical averages, has historically seen some of the largest gains into mid-July. However, with July futures approaching expiration in the coming weeks, basis tends to be more volatile, and monthly trends can match significant week-to-week swings. Looking ahead to next week, basis relative to July futures is likely to soften in some markets as the contracts approach expiration. Staying on top of local conditions as we move through July will be important.
And this is Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Milk prices rise when the market is trying to signal that more milk is needed. If that milk supply is slower to respond, the price can remain higher for longer.
There's an increasing risk of vertical integration in dairy. Senior dairy analyst with Terrain, Ben Lane.
Milk prices fall when the market is oversupplied, signaling that a slowdown in production is needed. The first to feel this pressure from low prices will be smaller farms with a higher break-even milk price. Larger farms with lower break-even levels and more robust risk management will be better insulated from this margin pressure and able to continue their status quo production levels for longer. Over time, the heightened pressure on smaller farms' margins drives them to either exit the business or grow, further fueling consolidation. An increase in vertical integration has developed in tandem with the consolidation in dairy farms. When the industry landscape was defined by a large number of small farms, vertical integration was limited to opportunities for farmstead cheese production or producer bottlers who were able to bottle and sell fluid milk from the farm. The cooperative structure of the industry evolved out of the need for farms to focus on milk production, while cooperatives could pool milk and focus on marketing, manufacturing, and balancing the milk supply. As farms expanded, large-scale farms felt the limitations of this system and looked for opportunities to partner and invest in processing assets to take more control of the processing of their milk. This is a contrast to what has been seen in other livestock sectors like pork and poultry, where processors and brands have worked backward along the supply chain to take greater control of genetics and contract with farmers to raise livestock and operate farms. Cooperatives have historically been a means for producers to pool resources and hold equity in the marketing and manufacturing roles of the cooperative. But when a large-scale producer or small group of large producers invests directly in processing assets, they have the advantage of direct access to low-cost, high-quality, consistent milk compared with a cooperative that must pool many smaller, disparate producers. Vertical integration can lead to efficiencies and reduce transaction costs for dairies, but it also leads to barriers to entry that reinforce consolidation. With large, vertically integrated operations, it becomes harder for new entrants, either farms or processors, to compete when they do not control multiple levels of the supply chain. Still, alternatives remain for producers who do not want to vertically integrate. Entering direct partnerships with processors is one opportunity. Specializing in tailoring milk components to match the needs of the specific processor can strengthen these partnerships. Consolidation in the U.S. milk production sector does not mean that achieving scale is the only path forward. There are feasible paths forward at various farm sizes, but a successful strategy will rely on competing on dimensions other than the ability to produce commodity milk at low cost. Smaller operations face higher unit costs. They often have the advantage of being closer to the end consumer and having consumer trust. Farms can leverage this through premiumization by differentiating their milk as organic, non-GMO, or grass-fed. They can also explore opportunities to bottle milk and market direct to consumers, capitalizing on local food and farm-to-table value. Mid-size farms are and will likely continue to be a difficult size to settle at, but technology and precision can enhance competitiveness. Farms this size rely more heavily on outside labor and begin to have many of the same challenges as larger farms, but are not able to spread their overhead to the same degree. They may not have the scale to justify more management-level employees in roles like personnel, herd health, or purchasing, often with the primary operator taking on these responsibilities directly. Many medium-sized farms, if not seeking to expand, may find opportunity in technologies like genomics and robotics. Genomics can lead to a level of precision and accelerate genetic progress in the herd, also enabling optimization for livestock sales, including beef on dairy. Robotics can provide dramatic improvements in labor efficiency at this scale and reduce the opportunity cost of unpaid labor. Farms that already have achieved significant scale and efficiency need to seek strategic competitive advantages. This will take the form of continued vertical integration. Farms may see controlling additional links in the supply chain as a form of risk management and ensuring a reliable market for their milk.
It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.